From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. You may think that the subprime mortgage crisis of 2008 is old news. Wall Street is booming, and big banks have closed the chapter on their dirty deeds. Indeed, corporate America has one of their own in the White House and many colleagues in cabinet posts. But a new special investigation has found that the practices of one of the nation's biggest banks, J.P. Morgan Chase, is worth a deeper look. Writing for The Nation, journalist David Dayan, in a special investigation, found that J.P. Morgan Chase, headed by CEO Jamie Dimon, paid for its settlement with the government over the subprime mortgage crisis by forgiving home loans on properties that had been sold off to others already. David Dayan is a contributor to The Intercept, The Nation, and a weekly columnist for The New Republic. His book, Chain of Title, How Three Ordinary Americans Uncovered Wall Street's Great Foreclosure Fraud, will be out in paperback earlier this year. And his special report for The Nation magazine is entitled, How America's Biggest Bank Paid Its Fine for the 2008 Mortgage Crisis with Phony Mortgages. Welcome to the program, David.
Thank you.
So first, let's begin with what it was that J.P. Morgan Chase was found to have done, you know, briefly to set the stage in 2008, and what the government asked it to do to essentially make up for and compensate for it, the settlement that was reached with the government.
Sure. So J.P. Morgan Chase engaged in a litany of misconduct, like practically every bank, in the run-up of the housing bubble and then the collapse of it leading to the financial crisis. There were two big settlements, and they covered two different pieces of misconduct. One was lying to investors. They sold, you know, they packaged up these mortgages and sold them to investors under false pretenses, saying that these were good loans when, in fact, they knew they were dreck. The other big piece of misconduct was in the foreclosure process, where they cheated borrowers, they used false evidence in court to foreclose on people. And so that was another big bucket of conduct and misconduct. And so there were two major settlements here, and there was a big headline number, billions of dollars, but most of that penalty was in the form of what they called consumer relief. And consumer relief means that J.P. Morgan Chase was supposed to forgive loans or cut the balance on loans for struggling homeowners so they could stay in their homes. And in fact, in these two settlements, $8.2 billion was supposed to be in the form of consumer relief.
And by consumer relief, the government basically wanted J.P. Morgan Chase to, what, forgive loans or restructure loans for better terms, et cetera?
That's correct. So it was sort of a two birds with one stone kind of operation. Right. J.P. Morgan Chase would be paying their penalty, so it would presumably cost them money to do this. And also, people would be able to stay in their homes, stabilize their communities, and not be kicked out in a foreclosure. So it was kind of trying to do two things at once.
And then J.P. Morgan Chase tried to do two things at once. Let's talk about that part of it, which is the important part that your investigative report focuses on. You found out that J.P. Morgan Chase was selling these sort of bundled bad mortgages off because it wanted to get rid of what was considered sort of toxic debt. But then it tried to convince the government that those same properties that had sold off were the ones that it was forgiving loans for.
That's correct. And this comes out of a big lawsuit that one of these investors who purchased these loans, a guy named Larry Schneider, is pursuing against J.P. Morgan Chase. So he purchased this tranche of about 3,500 loans, as you say, toxic loans, that J.P. Morgan Chase just wanted off their books. They wanted nothing to do with them anymore. And he purchased them around the beginning of 2009. And he always had trouble kind of making sure that he had all the proper documents on them, that he had the proper information so he could reach the borrowers and work out solutions with them. That was the entire purpose of him buying these loans. 3 years later, Many of his borrowers start getting these forgiveness letters from JP Morgan Chase saying, as the result of a settlement with the federal government, you no longer owe anything on this property, on this loan.
Except that they did still owe their mortgage to the guy who bought that loan.
That's correct. So these individuals were completely confused. I mean, they didn't know if Larry Schneider, who claimed to have bought their loan in 2009, was lying to them and just collecting payments from them for 3 years, or if something else was going on. What it turned out was that Chase had already sold these properties to Larry Schneider and other investors. They found 21 investors, in fact, in an internal report that they had sold off these properties to. And then they forgave these loans as part of a scheme to take credit for consumer relief under this mortgage settlement.
And you can't do both. I mean, you can either sell them off, after, you know, which means that you're done with them, or you can say you've forgiven the loans and then say that that paid effectively for the settlement. But JP Morgan Chase did both.
Yeah, that's wow. Theft. Like, that's no different than me saying to on behalf of whoever you owe money to that you don't owe it anymore. You know, I mean, I have nothing to do with whatever debt you have. Hmm. I have no interest in it. I have no ability to cancel or forgive that debt for you. And that's no different than what JP Morgan Chase did in this case.
So when the investors like Larry Schneider bought these loans, were they not getting payment? So then it was basically their problem. They buy these loans for pennies on the dollar, and then it's up to them to try to squeeze some money out of the people who owe them. For those homeowners who wanted to stay in their homes and continue paying their loans, who did they pay their mortgages to, JP Morgan Chase or Larry Schneider?
Well, the idea was that if you buy these loans at a cheap enough rate, you could give a massive discount to this borrower and still make money on the deal and be able to continue doing it.
Right. So in a way, it is a sort of win-win for the homeowner and the investor, and really for the bank selling the mortgage too, because then they can write off the toxic debt.
That's right. Complete win-win for everybody. That's the theory. The problem is that JP Morgan Chase, when they sold these loans, they didn't sell it with the complete information. So that makes it hard for Larry Schneider to find. I mean, some of these loans didn't have addresses attached to them. They didn't have phone numbers. They didn't have the names of the borrower. So some of these weren't even mortgages. They were what they call deficiency judgments, like bad debt on a loan that was already foreclosed on and the borrower had long since moved away. So, the entire purchase was under kind of false pretenses. And then what we come to find out is JP Morgan Chase was still employing third-party debt collectors to collect on these loans at the same time that they sold them off.
Wow.
It was this situation where they were jumping in and out of claiming ownership depending on what was at issue. If they were trying to collect off these borrowers, they'd say, oh yeah, we own it, give your payments to us. If the state or city municipalities were coming to them and saying, hey, there's a code violation on this property, they would say, oh no, we don't own it, we sold it to this guy, Larry Schneider. So it was kind of the best of both worlds.
Wow.
For Chase.
That just is so outright criminal. I mean, if individuals try to do this, you get tossed into prison. So just going back to the point you made earlier that this debt was sold to people like Larry Schneider, who you profile in your article, with incomplete information. Do you think that was? Do you have any sense that was deliberate? Because of course, if Larry Schneider had all the details about all the loans he bought, then he could sort of actually do the job that he, you know, then intended to do: follow up on them, see if he could set up a payment plan. But he had some properties on this bundle of loans that he didn't even know who they were attached to. Was that deliberate, you think?
Yeah. So. Larry Schneider had been working with JP Morgan Chase on kind of a one-off basis, and he was always getting the information he needed to make the thing work. When he got this batch of 3,500 loans, they came from this secret off-the-books database that JP Morgan Chase had set up. They called it RCV1 or Recovery One. And that database was designed to sort of convert these toxic loans into just bad debt. They were like charging off the loan so they could take insurance. And at that point, they lost track of all the information on these. So there, that's the common question. Was it incompetent or was it deliberate? The structure by which created, what created this database that wasn't going to have perfect information, that was deliberate. They could say, we just lost track and it was incompetent. And when we sent these over to Larry Schneider, we didn't have all the information. But the way that they set up this entire framework ensured that there wouldn't be full information on these loans that they sold off to Larry Schneider. And certainly it seems like they tried to take advantage of that.
Hmm. How typical do you think this relationship was with all of the almost two dozen investors that JP Morgan Chase sold these bad debts to? Do you have a sense that Larry Schneider is not alone?
I don't believe he's alone. I mean, JP Morgan Chase did a sample of 500 loans. You know, they forgave about 30, maybe even 50,000. They only sampled 500 and they found 108 of them were sold off previously to 21 different investors, not just Larry Schneider. And none of the others have really come forward other than Schneider, who is fighting this in court. It's now that court battle is in its fifth year. We haven't heard from the others, but I would suspect if they came from this same secret database, the same problems would have existed. And Schneider's case is just maybe the most egregious of a practice that they were engaged in with multiple investors who purchased multiple loans from them over a period of a number of years.
So who is Schneider suing specifically? Because, it should have been the government's job to make sure that this was all being done properly as well. Government oversight was crucial since it was a settlement with the government under which Jamie Dimon and JP Morgan Chase carried out these practices.
Yeah, well, a couple things there. He's suing JP Morgan Chase for breach of contract and interfering with his loans and all of that. However, there is an attached RICO, a racketeering case, that includes the Federal Oversight Monitor, the entity that was supposed to be monitoring this settlement. As you said, they were charged by the Justice Department with federal oversight. And in documents that Schneider has obtained, it appears that they were engaged in almost coaching JP Morgan Chase into how to take credit on these loans by forgiving them. There was an extra benefit that JP Morgan Chase got from that because these loans weren't being handled in the way that mortgages are supposed to be handled by statute. And if they forgave them, they wouldn't have to submit those loans to the oversight monitor for a study to see if they're actually complying with federal law. And so the oversight monitor kind of told JP Morgan Chase, well, if you forgive these loans, you don't have to show them to us and you can take credit. And that kind of gave the green light for this scheme to be put into place, which not only was JP Morgan Chase, taking credit for these loans that they had already sold off, but even the loans they didn't, these were not loans that by canceling them were going to help any homeowners. These were the real toxic stuff that the homeowners had left the property. They had already assumed a foreclosure. And by forgiving the loan and canceling them altogether, JP Morgan Chase sort of got rid of their responsibility to maintain the property, got rid of their responsibility for property taxes, and all of that reverted back to these homeowners who had left years earlier, might be in another state, and all of a sudden the city, whether it's Detroit or Chicago, is looking for who actually has responsibility over this property. Usually they didn't find it, and so this not only hurt homeowners who had this new problem to deal with, some call it a zombie foreclosure that just resurrects and keeps, haunting these people. But it also hurt these cities that all of a sudden all this urban blight that nobody has responsibility for is foisted upon their communities. Wow. And so it was a
and also losing taxes problem. That they should have been getting.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. So wow. So to answer your question, Schneider is suing JP Morgan Chase, but also there's this role of the federal government that he's looking into as well. And the final thing on this case is that Larry Schneider was able to uncover through the discovery process that Jamie Dimon was directly involved in this project of forgiving loans. There are minutes of meetings where it is said that, you know, Jamie Dimon instructs the people putting this together not to release loans in the city of Detroit until a particular time period. And that's interesting because J.P. Morgan Chase gave a gift in May of 2014 to the city of Detroit, $100 million gift to promote economic recovery. And it was clear from the context here that Jamie Dimon didn't want two things happening at once, that they give this gift and that also there's this mass release of loans in the city of Detroit that is causing chaos within the city. And so he instructed his underlings at Chase not to release these loans. Usually you don't have direct involvement from the CEO or chairman like this. And that really warrants further investigation, which if we had, you know, a Justice Department that actually investigated these kind of things, maybe we would see that.
So how, what role does JP Morgan Chase's size play in all of this? Because this is an important thing. We were told in 2008 that these banks were too big to fail, that if the government, you know, essentially let them take full responsibility, they would collapse, and with it would collapse big chunks of the economy. But because of the size of these banks, were they also able to play these sort of shell games on many fronts without being discovered just because it's so complex?
Yeah, I think a couple things. Number one, you mentioned the complexity. I mean, if you think about it, when they were devising these settlements, you had these prosecutors who are involved with the law, whose life and career is devoted to busting criminals. And then on the other side, you had mortgage bankers. And they were trying to figure out consumer relief on a mortgage settlement. Obviously, J.P. Morgan's mortgage bankers had the upper hand over federal prosecutors and devised ways to game this system. The other thing that this shows, I think, is just that these banks are just too big to manage. Like, if you think this was not deliberate, which I assume would be J.P. Morgan's alibi, then you have to conclude that they just couldn't figure out how to deal with this situation. They couldn't even remember what loans they had sold off and what loans they didn't. That just speaks to the size and complexity of these organizations and shows that smaller organizations would be better equipped to not stumble into horrible situations like this. Now, if you believe it was deliberate, that's another reason to break them up. So, you know, either way, any way you look at this, I think it is an indictment of how we handled these banks after the financial crisis and how we enabled them to get even bigger today than they were at that time.
So under President Obama's oversight, this happened. I mean, you're talking about these settlements being done, you know, under the framework of President Obama, who many say had he... You know, he didn't create the crisis, obviously, or allow it to happen. But how he handled it and how he allowed banks to get away with it, how his Justice Department allowed banks to get away with things was a big part of the problem. Now we are in an even worse situation. I mean, one might imagine that faced with so much documentation, the Obama administration might have been pushed into investigating these issues. But under Jeff Sessions and the Trump administration, this is exactly the kind of thing that, you know, Trump would say, well, Jamie Dimon was being smart, right?
Yeah, exactly. And he was being smart, right? Because he got away with paying a penalty with someone else's money. Look, I don't expect Jeff Sessions to go after this in any meaningful way. But I do think you have to put the onus here on Barack Obama and Eric Holder. Eric Holder, who is a partner in Covington and Burling right now, which is the law firm representing JP Morgan Chase in this lawsuit against Larry Schneider. So I think that this was one of the biggest mistakes of the Obama presidency. I think in some ways it helped lead to Donald Trump as president because it exemplified this two-tiered system of justice and how the rich and powerful have the game rigged for them. And that is many of the themes that Trump was playing off in his general election campaign. And so I think this is really quite a tragedy. And it's something we can't forget. And that's, I think, maybe why I continue to return to this issue over and over again, is we can't forget what happened here and what banks were able to get away with after the crisis. And we need to know that, because something like this is probably going to happen again.
Absolutely. And that, I think that's the most important takeaway of your piece, is that essentially banks see from these dealings that this is a good model for them to handle future crises, right? So
yes, just makes good business sense.
Yeah. David, we'll post a link to your article from our website later today. Thanks for all the work you do and for joining us.
All right, thank you.
My guest is David Dayan, a contributor to The Intercept, The Nation, and a weekly columnist for The New Republic. His latest book, Chain of Title, will be out in paperback later this year. We've been discussing the findings of his special investigative report for The Nation magazine. It's entitled How America's Biggest Bank Paid Its Fine for the 2008 Mortgage Crisis with Phony Mortgages. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.